Incidentally, Brother Bill, I'm the other Tim. Just keep that in mind. I'm the other Tim. If you will, take your Bibles in hand. Go ahead and be opening them to the book of Genesis chapter 6. And we'll be there in just a few moments. Genesis chapter 6. And while you're turning there, I want to say that Tim and I, it had been a while since we'd had opportunity to go out and be on the golf course together, and we took Andrew and we took Nathan with us today, and I hadn't had a chance to play much with my nephews here lately, and for the most part we enjoyed ourselves, but I can't go play golf anymore with Andrew or Nathan at all. I mean, after all, would you go play with someone who they cheated all day long, you know, a person that would cheat and kick their balls out from behind trees and bushes and all kinds of silly stuff, and that was going on all day long. Just to make a six on a golf hole and tell the scorekeeper to write down a four, and just all kinds of mess. Well, yeah, neither would I want to go play with someone like that. So, just picking at them a little bit. We had a great day, and I don't know, they may not ever want to go out and play with me and play golf again, but we had a great day, folks. You have been just too kind to us this week. You've treated us like family. You've treated us better than we deserve, and we appreciate that. We love you so much. A great fellowship meal yesterday, great fellowship in our worship, and your attention has just been fantastic, and your kind compliments and words of encouragement, and they mean so very much to me. And you can call me Tim anytime. That'll be quite all right, and I'll go right along with that. Genesis chapter 6, and what I want us to do is look at beginning of verse 5. And I want us to see this, and we're going to get a picture here in our minds tonight. God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repents me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. That says a lot to us. And we think about what we read here and to imagine this world that Noah lived in, this world at this time, to imagine the God of heaven in all his glory and his purity and his righteousness. And he's looking down at this ball of dirt, as I sometimes call it, looking down at this creation that just several chapters earlier, as he had created this world, and God, didn't he say, as he created each day, creating these, everything on the face of this earth, and he would say, and it was good. It was good. And we as mankind, especially at that time, had made a mess of God's world. And could you just imagine that vivid picture here that we read in our Bibles of the worldliness that the character of even man in his heart, and it's not just evil and it's not wickedness occasionally. It was almost all the time. It was continually. Man is thinking about nothing but evil all the time, continuously, day in and day out. And as I heard someone say, it was very possible as they went to bed at night, they were thinking about, as they fell asleep, what evil can I do tomorrow? What wickedness? And to think about being the only righteous man with the only righteous wife and your sons, your three sons and their wives, and what that would have been like. You know, we live in a world today in America, and we look about us and we see so many, as I call it, abominations. Abomination, the idea of that word, something that stinks before God is what I call it. That's the idea behind that word abomination. It's like, and I'll give you a word picture here if you've never heard this before. And I say it a lot, especially starting this time of year, where the weather gets warm and you drive down a country lane and there's been an animal that has been struck by a vehicle and it manages to go over into the ditch and die. And it's been there for two or three, 4 days, a week. And you drive through there and it is so bad. And it smells so putrid, you almost taste it. And that's the idea. And I always tell Lanita, that's abomination. Something that stinks before God. And he's looking down at the earth at this time, and it is nothing but an abomination to God. Everything that man is doing, everything about the earth, man has so polluted it that it, before God's nostrils, it just reeks of this putridness. And any remnant of a desire for the higher calling of God, it was long gone, long dissipated, man no longer thinking about God, and thus God, as we know, would destroy the world. Now let me pause here just a moment and insert this. I meant to say this at the beginning of the lesson. Now I told Lenita this afternoon, I said, I'll get up there and I'll say Moses instead of Noah. And as soon as we get to the building, first thing Tim has to say is, don't say Moses instead of Noah. And I will share with you, there was many Sundays ago, I was preaching on the little man Zacchaeus. I love that story. And I had Nicodemus climbing up that tree for some reason. I could not get straightened up. So if I say Moses tonight, you know I'm talking about Noah. Although Moses did, incidentally, write this account. He was the author of this account. But we want to think about, you know, why God destroyed the world and why only 8 souls were saved. And I want us to look Genesis chapter 6 and make note of verse 8 because that's very important. And it's part of what we want to think about tonight. Noah found grace in the eyes of God. The idea of grace, the idea of a gift. And we'll come back to that in a moment. And we think about the man Noah. And I want to say just a few things about him as we get into this lesson to begin this. That Noah, he was not a perfect man. There was only one man that lived upon the face of this earth that was perfect. And we know that to be Jesus, the Son of God. And so we know that Noah was not a perfect man, but according to Genesis chapter 6, and we look at verse 8, and he found grace in God's sight, and then you go down to verse 22, and this is just equally important to understand this about Noah and getting this picture of Noah. He did all, or according to all, let me say it right, that the Lord commanded of him. Now he was faithful to God's commandments, faithful in all things. And again, I want to make this illustration before we get into the lesson. I've used this before. And for many of the ladies perhaps here tonight, and I were to ask how many of your husbands were perfect. And typically, and don't you do it, usually I ask that question, I use this illustration. Lenita wants to raise her hand, and she by no means needs to do that. But there shouldn't be a single hand go up in this auditorium when we ask, you know, who has a perfect husband? But let me ask you this, ladies, how many of you have a faithful husband? Faithful. And just about every hand in this building will go up. And we begin to get this idea, this difference between perfection and faithfulness. And God knows in our lives, as He has created us as humankind, God knows that we will not be perfect. We cannot be perfect like His Son. We can strive for it, but God does want us to be faithful, striving to obey His commandments. And you think about Noah here. I see this with Noah. And so, as such, God makes salvation possible for Noah as an obedient servant, and his obedience to the words of God, that is what allowed Noah to find the salvation that he had and to experience the blessings that he had from God. And we sometimes don't think about how much God blessed this man and his family. And so tonight, what I want us to do is we think about the ark, and we think about Noah entering into the ark. And what I want us to get in our minds is the blessings and blessings that Noah saw as he entered the ark. And I want to begin with the first one, and it is in the ark Noah saw that we, a person himself as well as us today even, that we cannot be saved without the grace of God. We think about grace, and let me just say something about that for just a moment. I think innately we all understand the idea of grace. We understand the idea of, that's a gift. I think of other words synonymous sometimes that help me to better understand a word. And to me, the best word that's synonymous with grace is the idea of gift. And God has given us a gift. So many gifts when we think about it. But where we look at this account and we see what Moses wrote. Now, I'll say Moses there because he wrote this. And he wrote that Noah did what? He found grace, first and foremost, in the eyes of God. Now, it says he was a just man and he was perfect in his generation, and that's why I wanted to make that point about, you know, being perfect as such. And the idea of perfect here, as it is put in our Bibles, as it is referring to the man Noah, is the idea of being blameless, without blemish, undefiled perhaps, and you think about the defilements of the world all around him, and he's not been defiled by that. He has drawn that line of demarcation, which we need to do as God's people, to say, there is that line, and I will not cross that line. And that's the idea of what I see in his life, is Noah is striving to live here upon this earth. And it's described because the text, does it not say, what did he do? He walked with God. I want you to think about that for just a moment. In our lives, often do you hear someone, a Christian, a member of the Lord's church, refer to another person, and even the phrase, you know, that was a godly woman, that was a godly man, that was a person who walked with God. I want that to be said of me. And you want it to be said of you also. And when we think about Noah and a great example there, and the idea that, you know, he walked with God, and though he was not sinless and he was not perfect in that way as such, he was a godly man who communed with God. And thus, that's the idea of the statement. He walked with God. We cannot miss that. And he contacted the grace of God because God provided this shelter, this ark for him and for his family. You know, we have the same with Jesus. We have the same in the church. You know, you go in your Bibles and you begin to look at places. The book of Romans in chapter 3 and there in verse 24 as we think about it. And as Paul is writing, he says, we are justified freely by his grace. Don't overlook the idea of that, that gift of God. And it is through the redemption, we are redeemed, that we find through Jesus Christ. It's been extended through his Son. You go over just a few more chapters, and I label chapter 5 of Romans as one of those chapters that talks a lot about the grace of God, and just a snippet of that, if you go to chapter 5 and you begin reading in verse 8, and it tells us God commended his love toward us. How powerful is that? We were enemies of God, and that's what he's going to talk about. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Can you imagine that? Here's someone that's a sinner. I'm representing righteousness, and yet I will give my life for that person, that sinner, that impure person who's lost and defiled. That's the grace of God. That's a gift from God. And he goes on to talk about that, as, you know, about his Son and the fact that we were enemies in the context there in chapter 5, and we were reconciled to God by the death of his Son. And all these good things as such. And then you get even into chapter 6. And I love the opening verses of chapter 6. We, of course, we love Romans chapter 6. But verse 1 and 2. You know, what shall we then say to these things? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. How shall we that are dead to sin continue any longer therein? And the idea, the point he wants to make is God's grace is there, but let's not abuse it. God has extended it. And so we stay away from sin. We strive to be obedient in our daily lives, our daily walk with God in every way. We do his commandments. We obey him. You know, Titus 2:11, the grace of God. And again, the idea of salvation, to bring salvation. It's appeared to all men. Not some men, not a certain group of men, not, you know, those of a certain race or financial standing or geographical area or whatever it might be. His grace, through his love and the gift that he is giving, he's extending salvation, and it's to everybody. It would have been that way in the days of Noah. We know Noah is a preacher of righteousness. He preached for 120 years. No responses. That's a sad situation. The same for us today. We keep preaching the love of God, the grace of God. And then you go places like Hebrews 2 and verse 9, we see Jesus. He was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, there's that idea again of what God did for us in giving his only begotten Son. By the grace of God, he should taste death for some men. That's not what it says. It says every man, every one of us. And the grace that Noah experienced was not, you know, some claim, well, that grace, that was an arbitrary grace. It was just extended to him at that time. And it was, you know, even today, many will say, well, the grace of God is extended to me without regard to how they are living their lives. And when you understand the grace of God, it means that we've got to be obedient. That's the idea of verse 22. You know, he was faithful. He did all that God commanded of him. And we need to do the same if we want to avail ourselves of the grace of God. We need to understand that. Verse 22, thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. Obedience. But also in the ark, and we want to consider this. Noah is seeing another blessing, but it's also something he recognizes. There is a high cost associated with sin. We know that sin has always existed. Go all the way back to the very beginning in our Bibles. You go back to chapter 3 of Genesis, just three chapters earlier. We read all about Satan showing up in the Garden of Eden. We know the story and we know what happens, and man falls and paradise is lost. And God has removed the man and the woman to go out and to live in this world now that is cursed as such. And so it's always existed. And sin will continue as long as man exists on the earth. And Satan is around and he will tempt us. And sin always carries with it a high price. And what is sad is folks fail to realize that. Noah realized that. All of us here tonight, we realize that. We understand that. Look again, Genesis chapter 6, and you look at verse 5, and I want us to see this. God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth. Every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And then you go down to verse 7, the cost, the consequence. What does God say? I'm going to destroy man that I have created. I want to destroy him from the face of the earth, both man and beast and creeping things, the fowls of the air. God says, I'm destroying all of it. I'm doing away with it. It just cleaning house, so to speak. It repents me that I have made them. God changed his mind about mankind. Here's one time when God, and there's many times where God does repent of something, just as we should at times in our lives, but it repents him that he has made them. But if it had not been for Noah, think about it. If Noah had fallen into the same trap, been misled into wickedness by Satan, or had followed along with the rest of the world and just go along with whatever's going on, and had not separated himself and not had the influence as far as his wife and his sons and their wives, and you think about what would have happened. All of humanity would have been destroyed. And I can't say for certain how that story would have went at this point. Wiped clean, though. But God, for the love of this faithful, obedient man and his family, his wife and his sons and their wives, he extends his grace. But we have to understand, as Noah did, that the cost of sin is high. It's very high, and we get that. And even today, as God extends his grace to all those in the world, just as he tried at that time, those who will follow him and be obedient to him, but the real question is, do we see the high cost of sin as we look about us? Sometimes we do. Sometimes we see it with others. We see it in poor life choices. We see it in those who just for whatever reason are struggling to do what is good and right. And because of the lives they're leading, and we see the consequences. And sometimes it's something that doesn't happen maybe in one generation, but a later generation. But the consequences are always there. And again, many today, like the days of Noah, many today have totally left God, never giving God a moment's thought. Now, I think about 1 John, and I know, Tim, this is one of the first verses that, you know, when we're talking and we think about it, I think we've talked about this verse, but 1 John chapter 3 and verse 4. And it tells us the idea of what sin is. The idea of, I think this is your phrase, Tim, missing the mark. I'll always remember that. And it's always helped me to understand that. The idea of missing the mark, that whoever commits sin, they transgress also the law. For sin is a transgression of the law. What law? God's law. Don't go past it. Just stay within what God has delineated for us in our lives. Stay within those parameters as we live our lives each and every day. And I like what James says in James chapter 1. I was sitting there this afternoon talking about ice cream and trying not to fall to the temptation of ice cream. And I put ice cream in this, just fooling around with my nephews, but it's serious. When James says, let no man say, when I am tempted, I am tempted of God. Because God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempts he any man, but every man is drawn away of his own lust. or when he, every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. And we have to watch out for that. The things that, and Satan knows what will push your button. He knows what pushes my button. And we have to watch out for that. And Satan will. He'll dangle that little whatever it is out there to try to entice you and get you off track. And James is reminding us, don't do that. Because when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin and sin. Remember what he says about sin? When it is finished, it brings forth death.